This is Critical Edge. Today we're here with Cenk Uygur. He's one of the founders of the Young Turks and one of the most recognizable voices in American politics today, particularly on the left. Cenk, thank you so much for visiting us in Oxford today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So Cenk, the way we get started usually is we ask our guests a question, which I think actually gives quite a lot of insight into their character. And that's the last time you changed your mind on something significant.
Yeah. So it's funny, my son and I were talking about this at breakfast. Ben Mankiewicz and I started the show 23 years ago. Now we're the longest running online show in history. And back in the day, we were the only ones who ever debated that said, hey, good point. I changed my mind.
Yeah.
Okay. That never happens in a debate. And it never happens because we're in a death duel and nobody ever wants to let go of their ego, et cetera. You've maybe in your entire life in television and radio, you've never heard one person say, good point, I changed my mind. And you certainly have never heard it in politics. And in politics, a little bit different situation because in America, at least, they literally get paid for their opinions. So they don't actually have any opinions. In my case, I've changed my mind on so many things. I used to be a Republican. Now I'm known as, you know, one of the bigger figures in the left, in media and politics. I can give you many examples on the death penalty. I'm sufficiently vicious enough to be in favor of the death penalty because I believe in justice. And I believe in justice for the victims. The problem was we were killing the wrong people. So once the Innocence Project proved that 4% of the people on death row were innocent, I said, I'm out. I'm against the death penalty now, because it's one thing to kill the right person. It's a totally different thing to kill the wrong person. But I can give you many other examples.
That's a good example. Just to explore that a little bit before we get properly started. There's many different ways that people categorize justice. What you seem to be looking at there is what we call retributive justice,
mm-hmm.
which is you do a wrong, you get a wrong done back to you. Eye for an eye, let's say. In view of how much socioeconomic conditions shape people's decision-making, likelihood to commit crime and so on, shouldn't we look towards a justice which not only gives some extent of punishment, some retributive justice, but allows that person to reform, allows them to change, gives at least the possibility of becoming somebody new and thus giving them justice also?
Yeah, 100%. And look, the answer most of the time is not left or right. It's whatever's the right balance for society. So should we give people a chance at rehabilitation? Absolutely. And not only that, it's empirically the more correct way to go. For example, in Norway, they have what we would consider luxurious prisons by American standards. And what happens? Recidivism is so much lower than in America. Like the number of people that they save, victims that they save, because the people that go into Norwegian prisons commit so many less crimes when they come out, right? So as I look at this serial killer in Norway who killed children, complaining about how he has PlayStation 3 and not PlayStation 4, as an American, it's, you know, that's a thing that I'm, and a Turk, thing that I'm not used to, not comfortable with, but their system works. In our system, in America, we have so many things in America are absolutely mental, including our prison system, where we just accept that rape happens in prisons. Why? Why do we accept that? What kind of weird, brutal, insane system is that? That's not in the right balance at all. And does it help the average American? Is it like retribution and we should feel good about it? First of all, it doesn't happen based on the severity of the crime. It happens based on the physical characteristics of the person. So that makes no sense at all. It's not at all justice. Second of all, it creates more criminals and more crime when they get out. So it just doesn't help in any way, shape, or form. So on the other hand, it got to a point now where some of my friends on the left started talking about abolishing prisons and turning felonies into misdemeanors. And that was also mental. And so, no, we need prisons. And when some person hits a woman in the face with a brick, they need to go to prison.
100%. And it seems like you have a lot of strong views and clearly a lot of scope for reform in the American system as it stands now. How effective do you think you would be as president of the United States?
Well, look, so that's kind of a funny question. But if you're asking for an honest answer, which you, of course, you are, and that's what I do, that's what I'm known for, of course, I'd be an excellent president. I as good as you can imagine. And why? Because, oh, I'm so good. And it's a, no, it's just because I can actually understand, and I bothered to understand, what does the right winger, right wing voter think? What does the left wing voter think? What does the independent voter think? What does the average American think? What do they want? And how do I deliver that for them? That requires two things. One is integrity. So we've eliminated 98% of politicians, okay? Because I actually am dying to pass bills. So like somebody getting a position of power is irrelevant. Stop rooting for your politicians to be slightly higher than the other politicians. Who cares? The only thing you should care about and you should be obsessed about, no matter what country you're in, is did they pass bills that saved your life or helped your life? Or did they not? Or did they actively pass bills that hurt you and that hurt your family? That's what you should look at. Me, I don't give a damn about anybody's status or recognition or anything. My job, now this is from the outside, but you know, in your hypothetical, if I was president, it would be so easy to pass enormously popular bills. That leads to the point, I guess it's combined with the integrity point. Yeah, especially in America, you have to understand almost all of our politicians are criminals. They're not the best of us. They're the absolute worst of us. They're the dregs of society where billionaires said, who would like to raise their hand to serve me loyally and to make sure you don't serve your voters and that you are dogs to me? And these are the 98% of American politicians are the dogs that raise their hands and said, yes, I'll screw over the voters on behalf of my rich donors. They're the absolute worst. So if you just had one decent, honest person trying, that would make all the difference in the world. Does it have to be me? Not at all. It shouldn't be me. I hope it's someone else. And I want to help find that person and get that person in a position where they can win. And the other thing that it requires, and this is where, again, my side struggles, right? The right wing struggles, in my opinion, with morality, et cetera, in terms of treating the average American the way they want to, the way their voters want to. But they always get deluded by a con man like Trump or Elon Musk or in the old days, George Bush and Dick Cheney. Oh, we have your best interest in mind. First, we're going to give $4.5 trillion to the rich. But later, we're going to get to you. And the right wings are such suckers for that. Oh, yeah, it'll trickle all over us later. No, they're lying to you. They're robbing you, right? But on our side, we have a strategy problem. Our guys can't, our Democratic leadership, you got to put that in air quotes because there's no leadership at all there. They're pathetic. They couldn't manage their way, strategize their way out of a wet paper bag, right? They have a committee. They sit in the bag for 5 years trying to how to get it. Go through the paper. It's wet. You idiots. Okay. So right now their current brilliant strategy is do nothing. Wow. I didn't know you guys had that much strategy in here. So look, if you want, I'll tell you how you could pass paid family leave so easy, so quick. Almost every politician is a liar. Almost every politician is an idiot who can't strategize if they actually believe in paid family leave and wanted it.
I think I said it's polling at 83%. Is that correct?
I said 84%. So for those of you in the UK, you'll probably be shocked to find out in America that if you have a kid, the mom has to go back to work the very next day.
That's insane.
Mental, right?
Or at least it's insane.
It's insane for the whole world. So universal healthcare is in every developed nation on earth except America, even though America is the richest. But paid family leave is in almost every nation, developed or otherwise. Almost every single nation on earth has paid family leave except America. The richest country says, no, you just had a baby. Shut up and get back into the coal mine or on the assembly line. What do you think? We give a goddamn about you being a mom? It's so ironic because America's known, the slogan is mom, baseball, and American pie, right? And apple pie. That's supposed to be the three things that are most American. Unless you mess with corporations, in which case they'll smash that apple pie in your face with a baseball bat and go back to work, okay? So what do people in America do? They have to use all their sick days, all their vacation days just to get a couple of weeks with their baby, and then they go back on the assembly lines. So it polls at 84%. It should poll at 104%, but it doesn't matter because it's so overwhelmingly popular. Over 90% of Democrats, 74% are Republicans. So every Republican votes against it. So every Republican politician is a liar and a crook who votes against 3/4 of their own voters. And the Democrats go, oh, it's at 84%. I don't know how to pass it. Okay, why don't you hang a sign around your neck saying, I'm a moron? Yeah. You know how to pass it. You don't want to pass it. They're playing good cop, bad cop. The Democrats' job is the good cop. Oh, we'd love to pass it, but we just don't know how. And the Republicans are like, no, screw moms. I mean, we're in favor of moms and we're in favor of babies, but get back to work, right? So there, it's all a trick. We live under corporate rule. I could pass paid family leave in 2 weeks. I could do it if I was in your crazy hypothetical, if I was president. Well, I say crazy, but I did run for president. Okay. Yeah. Right. But I knew the odds. So, but he, assuming there's an ally in office, and it doesn't matter which party, shoot, here, I'll give you the most extreme example. If Donald Trump put me in charge of it right now, I could get it passed in 2 weeks. All you do is you go, okay, put a spotlight on it.
Yeah.
We're now voting on supporting or hating American moms. You go ahead, vote against it. Go ahead, we're all watching and we're gonna put your names on television for all the sons of bitches who voted against American moms. I dare you to vote against this bill. It will pass unanimously, but not one person is honest and strategic enough in America to pass that bill.
Okay, talking of Trump's administration, there's been lots of comparisons to, yeah, compare his tendencies to 1930s Europe, which is interesting for us Europeans. How do you see that comparison?
Yeah, so look, comparison to Nazis is too much. Nazis killed 13 million people, et cetera, we all.
Not necessarily Nazis also, but maybe like slightly fascist or the, let's say the seeds of fascism, maybe in Italy as well, for example.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what I'm getting to. Although, you know, when I say Nazis is too much, and then both Elon Musk and Steve Bannon do Nazi salutes, and then they gaslight us. No, just because I snapped my boots and I did it twice, it was an accident, Elon says. Or, oh, it accidentally looked identical to a Sieg Heil salute. Steve Bannon does it right after Elon Musk. Oh, did I just do one just like Elon's Sieg Heil? So I get it. I get it. So I know they think they're trolling likely, right? But I don't find trolling about being a Nazi to be funny or interesting. Okay, so, but mainly it's what you're referring to, fascism, right? And so that's where we get into definitions. So have I used the word fascist to describe Trump and his cohorts before? Yes. And why did I do that? So when I do that, the right wing gets so into their feelings. Like they're just like, they collapse in on a feeling, you know, cyclone. They're like, oh no, you can't call us. Like, look guys, you called the left every name in the book. Now you're catching feelings over somebody calling you a name. Please, please. Okay, so let's have a realistic conversation about this. So why did I call them that in the past? And why am I concerned about that? Because the brother lost an election in 2020. We all got eyes and ears. He went to court 61 times, lost, humiliated in every court case, including with judges he himself appointed, because he had zero evidence. He lost and he tried to steal an election. He did it through the fake elector scheme. And the riot on January 6th was just a small part of the scheme, and the people who participated didn't even realize the rest of the scheme. They were actually way less guilty than the people who planned it, Navarro, Eastman, Trump himself, etc. So you try to do a coup against American democracy, you can't catch feelings when someone calls you a fascist, because that's what fascists do. They don't believe in democracy. And Trump said after he lost, maybe we should terminate the Constitution. No, no, we should not terminate the Constitution because your fifis were hurt. Okay, no, we should keep the Constitution and you should keep your fascist ass out of office. But unfortunately, the Democrats are so incompetent that they lost to Trump again, while at the same time telling all their voters, don't ever vote for anyone on the populist left. Don't ever vote for Bernie Sanders. Don't ever vote for anyone who will actually help you. Don't ever vote for anyone who actually believes and fights for Democratic policies, because we, the Democratic leadership, are geniuses and we know how to win. Well, does it look like you know how to win? Because you lost to a fascistic clown twice. Not once, twice. They're the most incompetent politicians in the world.
Yeah, I think a lot of the kind of disagreement often comes from a kind of semantic point of view as well. People are disagreeing over what fascism means in the same way people might disagree what populist means. But to some extent, looking at Trump, there's definitely something there. And Ollie and I wanted to read you out a quote by Maya Angelou. When someone tells you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to that sort of quote in relation to Trump?
Yeah. I literally talked about this with my family 2 days ago. I used to think that was the most overhyped quote. I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess, right? If someone tells you you're something, that you believe them, right? And sometimes they say something hyperbolic and they don't really mean it, et cetera. But now I've grown to rather fond of that quote because partly because of the propaganda. And the reason why that quote is so popular is because somebody will tell you who they are. And then afterwards, when you just repeat it and you go, oh, he doesn't believe in the Constitution, he said to terminate the Constitution, then they gaslight you and they say, no, no, you can't call someone overthrowing democracy a fascist. You can't say that someone who wanted to terminate the Constitution is an unconstitutional authoritarian. And then they'll come up with 1,000 excuses and 1,000 pieces of propaganda so that you, when you say, just believe who they are, who they've told you they were, they go, no, no, it's unfair. It's unfair to believe what they told you they were, right? So, and by the way, if you're in the right wing and you caught feelings over the word fascist, who cares? Replace it with authoritarian. Does that make you feel better? Okay, all right, then I hope it makes you feel better that they're authoritarian and not fascist in your mind, because this is all wordplay. I mean, I'm here to debate Israel. I mean, Israel is the biggest wordplay king, propaganda king of the world. You know, when the Palestinians kill someone, they're savage, dirty terrorists. When Israelis kill 100 times more children, 1,000 times more children, they're the most moral army in the world. And they were, you know, human shields and collateral damage and propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. And not only believe who they say they are, but believe their actions. So when Israel murders 62,500 people, believe that they are terrorists because they didn't accidentally murder all those people. They did it on purpose.
And now, as I'm sure you know, a lot of this is undergirded by support from donors. So let's say, for example, in the case of Israel, which you just said, we have AIPAC, which makes a big impact on politics. Trump is kind of seen as an outside of establishment figure, what you might call a populist figure. However, he's also accepted something in the range of $330 million from the Adelson family, right? So for our European watchers who don't really quite get this, because I think it can actually be quite hard to grasp, can you give a concise account of just how influential money is in American politics and the different roles it plays in making politicians what you call either corrupt or morons?
Yeah. And yeah, it's a good point about morons because they're purposeful morons. They're being morons on purpose to suit the needs of their donors. Okay, first I'll break it down super simple in a way that everybody can understand. And then I'll tell you something that'll shock people and then I'll explain it. Okay.
Sounds great.
So a super simple way to understand is the Supreme Court in America legalized bribery. They just made bribery legal.
Can you be specific what you mean by that? Because Obviously bribery carries with it a legalistic sentiments.
That's right. So I'll explain that. So the part that might shock people is, unfortunately, and I love America, America has become the single most corrupt country on earth. It makes Afghanistan look pure and clean in their politics. Okay. So why? Because we legalize bribery. It's not even illegal anymore. You just pay the politicians and you own them. You own them 100%. They will serve you no matter what you do. Okay, so let me give an explanation and examples. So the Supreme Court in 1976, and I talk about this in my book, Justice is Coming. It's chapter 4, the most important chapter. If all you do is read chapter 4, please do that. It explains how the Democrats...
Always wrote chapter 4, I think.
Yeah. The Democratic Party, it explains how the Democratic Party got taken over by corporate rule. The Republicans were already serving corporate rule, so then they got a monopoly in America. And how did they do that? In 76 to 78, two decisions, Bilotti and Buckley, and the Supreme Court began to legalize bribery. What does it mean? They said, if it's at first it was a ballot measure, and then later it became elections, you could spend, in the beginning, they said corporations can spend money on politicians. Already that was nuts. And so human beings, if you want to donate, that's an argument we can have. But corporations, they only have one goal, especially in America, maximize profit. If you allow them to donate to politicians, they will donate only for that purpose and against all of the voters. Should have never been allowed. And the dissenting justices said, we're signing America's death warrant. It's only a matter of time before democracy dies because corporations will be able to buy all of our politicians. And that's exactly what happened. And then in Citizens United, they put it into hyperdrive. So last time I was at Oxford, we debated Citizens United. I debated the guy who won that case, the lawyer who won that case, and the top First Amendment lawyer in America, Floyd Abrams, won 2-1 Why, am I a better lawyer than those guys? No, because my side is so obvious. So when corporations give unlimited money to politicians, they buy them in an unlimited way. So, but it's not just corporations, it's also human beings. And so, and sometimes it's combined. So the Adelson family has an enormous company and they make money through gambling. And so they have casinos in Vegas, but their largest and most profitable casinos are in Macau, China. Okay. And so that family has given $337 million in campaign contributions to Donald Trump. Now, pause there. Every other country, you've got to be totally confounded. Wait, what do you mean? That can't be right. No, it's literal. In three different elections, 2016, 100 million roughly, 2020, 100 million roughly. This time we know at least 137 million. And a lot of this doesn't even include the dark money. Dark money, you can't even trace where it comes from, which is mental. It could come from a Russian oligarch. It could come from a serial killer. We can't trace the money. The Supreme Court said, you're not allowed to see where the money's coming from. And we've legalized unlimited bribery. So they're literally giving hundreds of millions of dollars to our politicians. And so what did Trump do? He put in four people in his administration that serve Miriam Adelson and Israel loyally. Marco Rubio, State Department, Elise Stefanik, our UN ambassador, Mike Waltz, our national security advisor, and Huckabee, who is our ambassador to Israel. They're all neocons. They all want war. They all say that America should support Israel above all else. Not only that, now they've started arresting people in America for criticizing Israel. I don't know if I'm going to be arrested when I go back. So they've taken away the First Amendment in America. Trump just put out an executive order saying, if you're considered anti-Semitic, what does that mean? Who defines anti-Semitic? And that's not a thing anyway. The First Amendment allows you to be racist, anti-Semitic, Islamophobe, transphobe. It doesn't mean you're allowed to do any of those things in America. But now all of a sudden, if you criticize Israel, we're going to put you in jail or we're going to deport you. Why? Because they literally bought Donald Trump. They bought all the politicians. But if you're mad at Donald Trump, don't worry, Joe. They bought Joe Biden for a lot less. AIPAC, which is a lobby, which is a little bit different than the Adelson family, right? Adelson family has corporate interests, personal interests. By the way, he was up on massive corruption charges in China, and Trump, in his first term, let that go for a tiny fine because he got bribed, right? And so, I mean, then they lowered the estate tax. They lowered the taxes to bring money from China to America from 35% to 8%. The Adelsons made billions. And at this point in American politics, if you're not bribing an American politician, you're not doing business right. Like you might be able to, they might be able to remove you as CEO if you're not bribing politicians in America because it's malpractice. They will do anything you want. By the way, that was just for campaign contributions. That's plenty enough to game for them to completely control the politicians. That's their power, fame, status, and their ability to make money in other ways, right?
Yeah. But I have an example, actually, if you don't mind, from your book, which I think is great. First of all, yes, it's actually shocking. I can't remember if it was a student or professor from Columbia, but has been detained. His family still don't know where he are. So that's a huge problem. Let's stick to the money for the moment. An example from your book, which I really like, is that there's 139 climate deniers in Congress who've received $61 million total from fossil fuel companies, large corporations, which is just under $500,000 on average each. I'm sure it's a lot more for some, a lot less for some. And the analysis you draw in your book is you'd be stupid to think that if somebody's donating corporate money or receiving so much corporate money, no matter what they say, clearly there's a link and clearly there's going to be some motivational link in how they behave in Congress. Can you lay out psychologically how that constitutes really quite good evidence, even though they'll officially say that those donations don't influence their attitude in Congress?
So to be fair, I want people to understand, I don't mean the voters, because the voters have no idea. What I'm telling you in this podcast is said zero times in mainstream media. CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, they never, ever explain the bribery. And you want to know why? They're the largest beneficiary of corruption. Because where does all the money in politics go? It goes to ads in mainstream media. So the New York Times and CNN will never tell you that all the politicians are utter crooks, and they know it. Okay, and the thing is, they're not all liars. Everybody's in a bubble, and they become, you could say, the victim, or it's in the case of the media, a willing victim of groupthink. So they, like if you guys were on ABC or CNN right now and we were in America, you would be outraged at everything I'm saying. Absolutely outraged. You're like, oh, you think $337 million affects a politician? That's outrageous. That sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Not just the politician, anyone who's given that money, right, is going to be influenced by that money.
Of course, of course. But the great majority of American voters, because right-wing media never talks about it, and mainstream media never talks about it, although right-wing media has changed lately, we can get into that. But in the past, would never, ever, ever talk about it. Even had, we call it MSNBC left-wing media in America, which is hilarious. It's just a giant corporation that it is sheep herds you into the same exact economic policies as Fox News, right? So do they ever tell their audience? No. So I don't blame the voters at all. They don't even understand what's happening in America because our media is nothing but propaganda in America, okay? So now, but when it comes to the reporters, guys, I know you're suffering from groupthink, and I know you're in a bubble and don't realize it. I'm talking to American reporters now, especially ones that cover national politics. But you really have to be the dumbest people alive to think $500,000 is not going to affect someone. That a million, 2 million, 10 million, 300 million is not going to affect someone. You would have to be a blithering idiot drooling out of the side of your mouth to think, oh no, I bet a normal human being isn't affected by $3.5 million. Have you ever met a human being? Right? But the most serious reporters in America will be outraged by that statement. They'll say, no way, it doesn't affect them. Maybe a little bit, but not worth discussing. I'm like, we're about to vote on a budget resolution right now in America. They never talk about the donors. You think the donors don't affect the fact that the Republicans are asking for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts? After they all got bribed by corporate donors and super rich donors, those are the exact people getting the $4.5 trillion tax cut. You think that they don't have to take it from somewhere? No, they have to take it from somewhere. Where do they take it? Do they take it from the rich? No. They're going to cut $800 billion from Medicaid because those are the poor and the lower middle class, and they have no lobbyists. They can't bribe the politicians. So they always take it out on the average American, and every moron reporter in America is like, no, I don't see any money in politics. It sounds conspiratorial. No, I bet they thought the $4.5 trillion in tax cuts was the moral thing to do. The right, come on, guys. They believe in supply side economics. No, they don't. They believe in a robbery, and you sound like pathetic schmucks. So, but I'm the bad guy in America. Like, so this is a normal, in the UK, you're probably not surprised by anything else. I mean, you might be surprised at how bad it is in America, but you're not surprised by my conclusions, right? But in America, because this wall-to-wall propaganda, I've been saying this stuff for 20 years, and every time I go on media to say it, it was utter shock and disbelief. They nearly kicked me out of NPR. They're like, how could you say these things? Like, I say, okay, Mitch McConnell, Republican, takes $1 billion in donations throughout his career. A billion dollars. And he distributes to other Republicans. He's a Republican leader, okay? And is that corrupt? You could actually get most Democratic voters to say, yeah, of course, that terrible Republican leader is very corrupt. I hate Mitch McConnell. And I say, you know, Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, also took $1 billion in donations, largely from the same people. She's also corrupt. They're like, Get him out of here. That's outrageous. He's insulting the beloved Nancy Pelosi. She's a master strategist. She's an angel. Get him off the air. And literally, NPR voters yelling. That never happens. In America, NPR, everybody whispers, right? But they were furious for me for pointing out the most obvious things that the whole rest of the world knows. I mean, look here, just real quick, I'm Mahmoud Khalil, who was arrested by ICE. So, he's a pro-Palestinian protester on Colombia. I went to Colombia, and I'm embarrassed at what's happening to Colombia, how Colombia has reacted, etc. But they have no evidence that he did anything wrong, broke any laws. He was just the leader of the peace protests. So they now have him in a secret prison in Louisiana, we think, but the government won't tell us where he is. He's been made to disappear in America as Israel's political prisoner. Because if you do protest against Israel now, because Donald Trump is so corrupt and has taken so much bribes from the Adelson family, and Joe Biden took $11 million from AIPAC, that's what I was referring to earlier. Kamala Harris, in this election cycle alone, took $5 million from AIPAC and other Israeli lobbies, or lobbies in favor of Israel. And so they're all corrupt. They all serve Israel 100%. That's why they're now literally arresting people in America if you disagree with Israel. And yet, when I go say this in American media, they'll call me an anti-Semite. They'll say that I'm a terrorist, and then they'll start a debate about whether to arrest me, even though I'm an American citizen. So if that's not fascist, what is it?
Yeah, it's definitely shocking to view from the outside. Again, there was no charge or official arrest. There was no warrant or anything like that for Mahmoud Khalil. So we really, really hope that some more details come out on that soon. To stick on the money point now, you know, you say absolute power corrupts absolutely, you're quoting. But anyway, you know, you say, for example, with these climate deniers, 500,000, 1,000,000, 3,000,000 from corporate interests, obviously corrupt merely by the fact of that donation. So I want to point this back at you, and I want to point this back at you and ask a difficult question, right? You received, or the Young Turks has received, $24 million, right, from a private equity firm and a venture capital firm. The private equity firm, in fact, was run by a former Republican, I believe, and the venture capital firm, okay, a chairman at Disney, right? So you've received that kind of money. These are people for whom profit is immensely important and whose interests are aligned with people for whom profit is immensely important. And you tell people that they're naive when somebody receives 500,000 and that doesn't impact their interest. But your company has received 24 from corporate interests.
Yeah.
How can you say that doesn't affect you and yet point that outwards, right?
Yeah, super easy. You think it's a difficult question. It's actually a very simple question. So what you should look for in the terms of a media corporation there's several different factors, but in terms of investment or money put into a company, is it an investment or is it a gift? So for example, Prager University would get $20, $25 million a year from right-wing billionaires, and it was a gift. Well, is it a gift or are you paying for propaganda, right? Because normally in capitalism, when somebody gives you money, they expect a return on investment. In this case, they're saying, no, go ahead and do whatever you want. Well, of course, not whatever you want, the message we want. So they're paying for propaganda, okay? So in our case, it was an investment, the most obvious, clear capitalist thing in the world, okay? So the private equity company you're referring to is the Romers, and so they're, I didn't even know that they were a private equity company, but no problem. If they are, okay? But what they did was a simple loan to us. So they loaned us $4 million. We paid back the interest and the principal. That's it. Simple business transaction. If you say you can't do that, I'll get to the next one, in the venture capital one in a second. If you say you can't do that, that means you can't run any business because you need money to start a business. You need an investment money.
Sure, but they have corporate interests, right? And yes, they're investing and it's technically business, right? But that in some way means there's also more strings, right? Because those people who were donated to in Congress, as Congress people, right? There's zero strings, you know? It's not even, oh, we want a return on investment, strictly speaking. It's just, hey, we're technically giving this to you. And you say, look, it's naive to think that they'll just give that money, right?
Yeah.
In the same way, they may be making an investment, right? But if, for example, you were to sufficiently harm their interests, they wouldn't donate to you, even if it were going to be somewhat profitable for them, because they know that your influence, right, and the amount that corporations are taxed, for example, and so on and so forth, that's important to them also. So you've got to claim there's absolutely no link between them being huge, high financial institutions, which, by the way, is the epitome of profit seeking in America, and that's got nothing to do with the protection of corporate interests when it comes to you, but not with other people.
But you said two different things there, brother. You said profit seeking. That is true. That's exactly what they're doing. They're a finance company. To my knowledge, I don't know that much about them, but and we gave that money back a long time ago, 8 years ago now. So they're a finance company. So what are they interested in? Profit seeking. So they made a deal. So it wasn't like, hey, I'm giving you this money and strings attached for opinions. No, the strings attached was, I want more money back.
Corporation tax harms profit, right? So they would get less money back if you had enough of an influence.
Right. So let me get to that.
Right.
So in all of our contracts, whether it's the Romers or it's the VCs that we did deal with, we have complete editorial control. So the deal is, you put money in, it's an investment, you're going to get money out, okay? You're going to get a profit out. And some people on the left hate that. They're like, don't do that. But they don't realize there's literally no other way to set up a media company. And so what you would do if you agreed with the left of don't do profit seeking, don't do investments, is that you would have no one on the left that could fight back as a media company. Now, in terms of what do they get in return? Again, they get profit in return. And so if they wanted what they got out of PragerU and some of the right-wing organizations, et cetera, they wanted marketing propaganda for other beliefs that they have, Well, they came to the wrong people, because in our contracts, we say you have no editorial control, and so you can't touch that, okay? So now you turn to the, so they got interest, just like a bank would, just like anyone would, and so we paid that money back, fine. The VCs put in $20 million, and yes, by the way, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's who you're referring to, which was part of
the Disney,
DreamWorks, et cetera, wonderful guy, super smart guy.
Oversaw Shrek for us, so that's something we can be happy about.
What's that?
He oversaw the making of Shrek, so that's something we can be happy about.
Yes, yeah. Oversaw the making of a lot of movies that you love. Now, he and I massively disagree in politics. He is a corporate establishment Democrat. Okay. By the way, another one of our funders was Graycroft, and their founding partner is Alan Patricoff. Another guy, wonderful guy. We get along perfectly great, but massively establishment Democrat. So in the primaries, we fight each other harder than anybody does. They support Hillary Clinton. They support Joe Biden. I support Bernie Sanders. And we go to, our two sides go to war, even though we're in the same company, or we were. Okay, so they still have 5%. We basically bought them out as well. Okay, so they no longer have the kind of interest that they had. They're no longer on the board, et cetera. And why did they put money in? Even though they disagree with our politics, for profit. And so that, so again, if you say don't take any investments just for them making pure profit, then you literally won't be able to compete with Fox, Daily Wire, or any of the right-wing organizations.
Fair enough. Just to... We can leave it here and I'll pass on to Ollie, but I just want to kind of clarify it. To some, it may seem that you're saying, well, if they receive money, they're going to be influenced. But and it's sure it may be true, Cenk is a moral person. I'm not influenced by money, right?
So, but
do you understand how it all might sound?
Of course I understand it. But guys, I keep saying it and I want you to understand it. Number one, you have to look at their incentives. What are they trying to get? When they give to a politician, are they trying to do it for general welfare, for charity, or to make a bigger profit for ExxonMobil, right? When they give to any media organization for free, are they trying to influence their what they're saying, their message, et cetera, or are they getting something else? But when they are doing it for getting an interest rate back or a return back or a profit back, that is their motivation. That is their incentive. So you don't need to add another incentive. I want to give, let's make up numbers. I want to give 10 and get a million back. That's my incentive. I don't need any further incentive than that, right? So if you say that that biases you, then that biases everyone, and then no one could ever start any company. Do you see what I'm saying? That's a giant, giant difference. And second of all, if you say in the paperwork that they don't have editorial control, then you literally took an extra step that no one else takes to safeguard your true opinions and make sure that your opinions are not affected by the money, even if the money is just trying to make a profit. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, thank you. Roughly, we'll move it on. And then obviously our viewers can kind of make their own decision on that. But we'll pass on to Ollie and take from there.
Yeah, so the place I kind of want to move next is somewhere maybe we agree more. I want to kind of discuss from a strategic perspective as somebody who's largely aligned with the left also. I think in your book, Justice is Coming, the way you talk about the impact of the media often is as mental programming, which in some sense I agree with, in the sense that, you know, people's opinions are naturally funneled through. For example, in the UK, we have GB News. And even though they may be reporting factually, the fact that they're constantly picking up these small stories about immigration or bad behavior from immigrants to a disproportionate amount compared to other news does in some sense programs people's minds. From a strategic perspective, a lot of people will hear that they're being mentally programmed. For example, you're saying that we're trying to call people over from the right to the left, right? And go, well, fuck you. You know, I'm not getting programmed. I'm a free thinker. How can we make sure that we're not shutting people out by telling them they're mentally programmed and therefore making them not receptive? Do you see my question there?
Yeah, I do. So, look, that's why I keep saying, and I didn't do this perfectly in the past either. And so, you know, what did I change my mind about recently? And I said there was a lot of examples. One that's more recent is I used to take it on the voters too much, and I'd attack right-wing voters as well. And so they're not all angels, and plenty of them, deserve what I've said. But categorizing all of them that way is definitely a mistake, and a huge number of them are good people that just got the wrong information. So these days, I try to take it out on the leadership. So whether it's political or media leadership. So yeah, you could, they often do this. When I say, hey, mainstream media is doing propaganda, they'll turn it around as if I'm not insulting them, but their viewers. And they'll say, are you saying that our viewers are being brainwashed? And that then triggers people. Oh, what do you mean? But guys, here's what I want everyone to understand. It doesn't matter what part of the political spectrum you're in. We all get influenced. We could use neutral words. You could use negative words like brainwashed or manipulated, or you could use a more neutral word like influence. The human mind is enormously open to influence. Think about it. Why does almost everyone believe in the religion they were born into? At 6 months old, 6 years old, 60 years old, did they ever go, wait, let me see now. Should I be a Christian, Muslim, Jew, or Buddhist, or Hindu? Some people have done that. Very, very, very small people, right? Number of people. Most people, the overwhelming majority, go, the religion I was born into is the right one. Why? Because you got influenced into believing that by your parents, by your church or your mosque or whatever it might be. And you come away thinking, oh, this is definitely right. But you don't know. That was just an influence operation, right? And again, that's kind of, we're calling it an operation makes it sound evil and nefarious. But this is how you get influence. So what I would ask everyone, again, not just the right, but the left and the middle too, what are you watching? What are you listening to? And I don't just mean media. I also mean your church. I also mean your religious organization. I also mean your parents. I also mean social media. How are they influencing you? What are you believing because they told you to believe it, right? When I did that with my own views, I mean, I dropped almost all the views that I had. I mean, you want to talk about, like, I was Muslim and I'm now stone cold atheist. Why? Because I read the Quran. And if you're Christian and you're feeling cocky about that, I also read the Bible. The Bible is even crazier than the Quran. Okay, so, I mean, just no one ever reads it. They just hear a priest or an imam or a rabbi tell you the good parts of it. And there are wonderful parts in the Bible, wonderful parts in the Quran. But if you read the whole book, I don't know that a single rational person can stay religious after that. So why is the 70% of the world religious? Because you were influenced in that direction.
Okay, so you're a populist, right?
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Categorization. Okay. What I'm understanding is people are influenced and often influenced by corporations, by their upbringing, so on and so forth. And one of the large strands of populism is that there's to some extent, a people, and then there's a them, a corporation, the corporations, right? When Ollie and I were kind of discussing and preparing for this interview, we were struggling a little bit to understand where that line comes. Where is the us and the them kind of separated? How do you divide an elite and a people? Is it kind of socioeconomic? Is it cultural? What would you say to that?
Yeah, so I don't think it's strictly socioeconomic because you could be a wealthy populist. Not a lot of them, but it's possible, and it's just an ideology, really, more than it is anything that's got to do with your bank account or anything along those lines. But yes, the rich tend to be the establishment more. Why? Because they're in power already. So this is another simple thing that American media doesn't explain to American voters. Why are all the politicians in favor of the status quo? Why did Joe Biden say to his donors, nothing will fundamentally change? Because if you're on top already, you don't want anything to change. Well, you're already at the top. So you love the status quo and you want to protect the status quo more than anything else. Change is your biggest enemy. Okay. So everyone at the top, that's why it's all good cop, bad cop. That's why the Democratic politicians pretend to be the good cops. The Republicans are the bad cops. MSNBC is the good cop. Fox News is the bad cop. But they're all on the same team. They serve the donor class. They serve corporations. And you could tell in their actions. If you didn't serve corporations, literally every nation on earth, almost every nation on earth, has paid family leave. If you serve corporate rule, then you don't have paid family leave. You don't have minimum wage. You don't have the social safety net, etc. So the establishment is people in power in media and politics. By the way, if you ask them, they would say they're not the establishment. Like if you ask a reporter at the New York Times, a senior reporter at the New York Times or a senior editor at the New York Times, they would say, of course we're not the establishment. What do you mean?
Are you the establishment?
Yeah, absolutely not.
No. You're not, Cenk is not the establishment.
No, I am okay. Diehard populist. So how do you tell?
Okay, yeah, how do you tell?
Because look at the policies. I fight for everything that goes to the average guy, okay? So they fight for everything that goes to corporations and the rich. So that $4.5 trillion tax cut that's going to go to overwhelmingly corporations and to the rich is an abomination. It's a great American robbery. We're about to get robbed to the tune of $4.5 trillion. It's going to be one of the largest robberies in world history. So now you can tell who's establishment, ask them about the tax cuts. If they say, oh, yeah, of course, that's eventually it'll get down to the masses. Eventually it'll trickle on them. You know, the rich will, you know, urinate it on top of them and it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Laffer curve. Ha ha, we're all laughing. Ha ha ha. Supply side economics. Anyone who tells you that is the establishment. They are the ones who say, no, the rich should get everything. The donors should get everything. And the average American should get nothing. So look, populism used to have a bad connotation across the world. In America, it just now means something really simple. It means what is popular. If you're in favor of things that are popular with the average American person, you're a populist. Nearly everyone else is in politics and media as establishment. They fight tooth and nail against that.
Yeah, thank you. It's interesting to me, actually, when I came across you for the first time, the fact that you described yourself as a populist, the term, at least in European politics for me, I'm half French, half English, so I've got kind of a foot in both sides. Populist is really negative, you know, to use against, for example, Marine Le Pen, for example, has been leveled against Nigel Farage and so on. But you kind of take it as sort of representing the people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know the populists in a lot of places have the connotation of you abuse the public's trust to then go and do what you want, like Donald Trump, right? But no, in the way that we're using it in America, and people often do, I'm not the only one who says this, a lot of people say Trump is a fake populist. He's a Trojan horse. He comes in the form of populism. He attacks the press. He attacks the other politicians. Here's when I knew, when I predicted Donald Trump would win the Republican primary. So Republican primary happens in the beginning of 2016. They start voting in January and February in Iowa, New Hampshire, et cetera. Back in October of 2015, well before the voting began, I said Trump is going to win the Republican primary. Why? One, he was ahead in all the polls. He just, everybody refused to believe it. Why? They're in the establishment. And they were like, no way this guy who's running as a populist is going to win. Everybody knows that populism is terrible. No, no, you guys think it's terrible. The American people love it. And then when he was on a debate stage and said, I gave all these guys money and they did whatever I told them to do, I was like, that's it, he's going to win. Okay, because that's so true. And everybody in America knows it's true, and he's the only one saying the one true thing, right? So then he used that as a Trojan horse to then get in and release all the tech bros out of the horse, right? And the Elon Musk and the Peter Thiels, and just that's also corporate rule. It's just a different set of corporations. They're the Silicon Valley guys. Now they're running the country. I mean, look at what Trump did. He's the biggest fake populist in the history of populism.
Well, yeah, he's surrounded by billionaires.
Yeah,
right?
He has more billionaires in his cabinet than any other president in history. He gave foreign policy to Miriam Adelson, his third largest donor, and he gave domestic policy to Elon Musk, his largest donor. I mean, it's a joke. The Mellon heir, that's the second largest donor, has to be kicking himself, going, I didn't even get any domestic or foreign policy. Should have asked for more, brother. He'd have given it to you.
Yeah, so very quickly before I let Lukas share his thoughts as well, the one part that's not clear for me about populism that hopefully you can explain is that ultimately you separate into two categories, and it seems somehow like it's aligned by interest. So you have the populist and the establishment, right? Those are the two ends, the people and the elite. Obviously, despite the fact that there is large inequality, American society exists on a gradient. You have Elon Musk, who's the richest man in the world. And then you have people who are struggling to put a pay, you know, struggling to get a wage together to support themselves, to put food on the table, to have heating. They're working two jobs, you know, and then you have a middle class, people in the middle, right? There's a whole gradient. And as you go further up, your interests become more and more aligned with corporate interest. So when you're categorizing so strictly as the people or the elite, or the populist in the establishment. How do you deal with this middle ground? The fact that somebody, for example, who's a middle manager at like a big professional services firm probably will have quite corporate interest, but they won't exactly be the elite either. How do you distinguish two categories so strictly when there's quite a big gradient?
Yeah, no. Look, when it comes to the average citizen, you don't have to delineate that much. And are there crossovers? Like I said in the very beginning, there's definitely crossovers. So, for example, FDR is in the elites. He was comes from a very wealthy, connected family. His cousin was already president when he won the presidency, but he ruled like a populist. So he passed Social Security and all these other laws that helped the average American rather than helping the rich. In fact, he said about the rich, "I welcome their hatred." And he engaged in class warfare against his own class. And in fact, they would call him a class traitor. So, and by the way, look, I'm not in the establishment at all. I fight against the establishment maybe more than anybody in America does. But is it fair to say, wait, Cenk, aren't you in the elites? Depending on how you describe or categorize elites, yeah, that is fair. I went to Wharton Business School. I went to Columbia Law School. Here I am debating at Oxford. Sorry, guys, but I'm going to give a speech at Cambridge next.
We'll forgive you.
So I get it, but you can be in the elites and still be a populist. So now back to your middle manager. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I want more jobs. And I know corporations create jobs. So maybe a targeted tax cut to keep the steel mill open could be okay, right? So nothing has to be black and white. Everything should be, as long as we're using independent judgment and as long as we have the right intent, which is to help the average person, okay, let's take a look at that policy. Does it help or does it not help? Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. As we kind of come towards the end of this interview, I wanted to bring up a quote that you write in your book. You were asked this question by your co-host a while back on The Young Turks, and it's quite powerful, I find. Did you ever consider that your dad might be exceptional? That it's not fair to ask everyone to be able to do the Herculean task that he did.
Yeah, so that comes from when Ben Mankiewicz and I used to do the show together, and Ben asked that question because back then I was more conservative, and I was saying, you know, you could pull yourself up by the bootstraps. I know my dad did it. He was a very, very poor farmer in southeastern Turkey with almost no opportunity at all. And he lived the American dream. He just, he wound up getting a free college education, then starting his own business, et cetera, right? And so can anyone do that? Yes. Well, in America, you can't because you won't be able to get a free college education. And so that's where all your dreams will end, okay? But back in the 1960s in Turkey, they could afford free college education for the people who scored best on the exams. So the fact that the richest country in the world says that they can't afford what Turkey could afford in the 1960s is absurd. It's totally absurd. But anyway, but I would often use my dad as an example, and he said that to me one day. And isn't it, and that really, that was one of the times where I said, good point. I hadn't thought of that, right? And it made me really ponder it to the point that I wrote it in my book a dozen years later, right? And it's true. And so that's why we have to set up a system that gives the most amount of people the best chance they got. Because we can't make everyone equal. And I talk about that in the book too. So some folks on the left say equity. We should all be equal in terms of results. No, I don't agree to that. I believe in equality of opportunity. We should all get a fair chance. But we're not equal people, right? We have different talents, different skills. If you said, okay, Cenk, in order to succeed, you have to do physics. Sad day for me. I will not succeed. Okay, I'm terrible at physics, and I will do subpar there. If you then said you should get the same salary and the same results as Albert Einstein, that doesn't make any sense. He's much better at physics than I am, right? So equality of opportunity. And so, and then after that, if some people succeed, great. Some people are in the middle, fine. Some people don't do as well. Let's try to help them, make sure that they don't suffer, et cetera. Give them a bare minimum so they could live. Unlike in America, again, one last shocking fact, since we're near the end here, for those of you who don't live in America. So in America, we have only private health insurance. So if you don't have private health insurance, we just simply let you die. So every year, the number, different studies put the number at 48,000, 69,000, in that ballpark. About 50,000 people a year die in America because they don't have health insurance. And we just let them die in the streets. And so that is insane. That is absolutely insane. So you have to have a floor. You have to have a bare minimum where you don't let people die in the streets. And that's why people love FDR. He was in the elites, but he did Social Security, which is populist, to make sure the senior citizens in America didn't die on the streets. So once you got the floor, yeah, then let people have whatever ceiling they want. So some, again, some on the left say there should be no billionaires. That doesn't make any sense to me. It depends. What's the billionaire doing? Did he do something wrong? Did he give money to a politician and demand something in return? Okay, let's stop that. That's wrong. Did he commit a crime? Did he abuse his workers? That's wrong. Okay, just being a billionaire. What if he won the lotto, right? That doesn't mean that you're a bad person. Being rich doesn't mean you're a bad person. But we have to have fair rules for everyone so they at least have the opportunity to get to where they want to get.
Thank you. I think there's a lot to unpack from the interview as a whole. And obviously, there's some points where we may or may not disagree. For example, I'm sure Ollie would disagree on that billionaire point. But I think for now, there's a lot there for everyone to kind of digest. Thank you for your time. Enjoy your time in Oxford and in Cambridge, hopefully. And looking forward to hopefully seeing you run again for president.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
No problem.